Teaching our children body safety starts early and often. Many times, parents feel completely overwhelmed by where to start and how to go about this. We do it to empower them with an understanding of body boundaries and respect, not only to cultivate body literacy for their whole lives in a healthy way, but also in an effort to help prevent or reduce the chances of sexual abuse. In this episode, we break down some simple ways to begin having these conversations with your child from toddler ages on up. Talking to our children about their bodies or about sex is not a one-time, huge, blown-out conversation, but rather very small, short moments over many years that build on each other to grow a relationship of trust with us, and also to respect the child's individual maturity at that time. There's a lot to say here, so let's dive in.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
The metabolic needs of pregnancy, postpartum healing, and making breast milk require more minerals than in other times of your life, and staying truly deeply hydrated during these times is very important. Nowadays, there are more options for this than ever, and ingredient quality manufacturing integrity is very important for Dr. Leah and I. That's why we love Redmond Relight electrolyte powders. Mined in the USA, Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt with 60 plus trace minerals in addition to the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium that pregnant and breastfeeding moms need. Pregnancy demands a huge increase in blood volume and synthesis of an entire new baby, and that requires, you guessed it, minerals. This is the perfect blend to be sipping on during your labor or to have mixed into your bedside water bottle during breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, strawberry lemonade, or lemon lime. Grab a sample pack option to try them yourself and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating!
Okay, we have a very exciting, well, maybe not exciting, but important. It's not exciting. It's a very important episode today, which is how we as moms and parents in general talk to our kids about body safety and about sex, and how we do it in a way that we don't just ignore it, because that's how some people's approach is and was, maybe for some of those of you listening, how your, you know, family approached it, but also not in a way that's, you know, weird. I don't know. It's just a really taboo topic. It's tough. No one wants to talk about it. And so we're kind of left fumbling in the dark and don't really know what to do. And I feel like that leads to a lot of issues in our society that we are all experiencing. And Dr. Morgan is going to help break this topic down, because a lot of our topics on the podcast come out of, for me, selfish reasons, because I want to know what your thoughts are on things. And I don't know what I'm doing either. You know, I'm a newer mom, and it's overwhelming, like having to navigate all these topics. So I'm so stoked that you are here to break this down for us. So why don't we get started and just tell people what we even mean by body safety?
Yeah. So first of all, let me just say that I'm not like a I'm not certified in this particular topic. There are people who are going to be better at this than me, for sure. But this is, I think, still a good base level of information. And maybe we'll have another topic another episode in the future where we're interviewing somebody who's more of an expert on this topic and can speak more to some specifics or more of the research or different things like that. But this is just what I've gathered in being a mom, you know, for almost 9 years now, and also having a particular interest in this type of information. I think that it's one of the scariest things in the world as a parent to think that, like, maybe something could happen to your kid, that they could become abused or, you know, in a sexual way, any kind of way, really. But like that sort of stealth, it seems like a stealth occurrence. So, okay, yeah, trigger warning. Obviously, we're going to be talking a lot about these types of things. If this is something that you don't want to hear, then maybe skip this episode for now. I won't be like sharing stories or anything. And luckily, I was not somebody who experienced this as a child. And it's not like that's where it comes from for me. It's just that I think that when I hear those stories, it breaks something open in my heart that is, I'm like, I don't know what I would do with myself. And I've tried to
learn as much as I can. And it seems to me at this point in time that this is the best approach to give your kids the skills to prevent abuse happening to them the best way possible. There's so much other stuff to be said about like watching family member or friend group behaviors for like grooming behaviors and that kind of stuff, which I'm not going to talk about, or like, you know, the video games that sometimes kids get playing on, and there's chats, and then those chats are hacked by, you know, I mean, it's sort of like we, ever since there was any kind of internet and instant messaging, even with AOL, you know, that's where they started the predators starting to come and try to talk to kids and coerce them into meeting up for sex or whatever it is. And, but even just as like little toddlers and things, there are situations where they may be in a room during like a holiday gathering and something happens and it's fast and it's heartbreaking. And so there are things I think that we can do to help equip our kids for that to be less likely of a situation to happen, or if it does, that they know what to do.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where we're starting with this. So first, also I want to say is that like, this is not a one-time conversation thing. This is something that we build. There are multiple drops in an entire bucket or ocean of conversations about body safety and sex that will come about in our life as parents. At least in my opinion, that's how it should be, quote unquote, should. Obviously, religious differences and backgrounds and experiences are going to shape the way that you do it with your family. But I do also feel like everybody needs to be still grounded in the reality that right now in modern culture, the average age of porn exposure to children now is like 8 or 9 years old.
It's so crazy.
The porn!
I know. Porn!
Like, not just the concept of sex or hearing about it from school or anything, but I mean, all of the media, everything, all these like little subliminal things that, you know, we try to do the best we can with screens and whatever, da, 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 but it's like, they are going to be overhearing conversations. They pick up on everything. Mm-hmm. They see the way that like women are dressed in certain situations in movies and music videos and da, da, da. And it's like,
Or kids on the playground at school. I mean, even if you have a screenless child,
yes,
they're still going to be around other kids that are exposed to things. And it's like the whole, I'm just going to ignore it and put my blinders on and it's just going to go away is unfortunately not.
It's not the most proactive. It's not the most proactive approach. And it honestly puts your child in the way of harm. I know that sounds kind of like, maybe affronting to be like but it is, it's sort of negligent. It's like, we need to talk about this with our children, and it doesn't have to be this scary thing. And it's also, to me, I think at first I used to think this, that it was like, I don't want to be the one to expose them to these topics that are too far beyond their maturity, but you don't have to, you can do it in these little ways. So I'll talk about how we do that in an age appropriate way. And also like, each individual kid will have certain curiosities at different times, and you sort of follow their lead while also building these foundations and basics. So this all begins with the idea of body safety. So body safety is the concept of teaching a child about their bodies and the like private part, you know, quote unquote, parts of their bodies that could be abused at some point, and how to teach them like, who can touch what parts, what are they called, what are the parts called, what happens if this happens, etc. So this can start very, very, very young, where you're just using the correct anatomical terms. So I think when we were being raised, it was like wee wee and wiener, and
My family was just private parts,
just private parts, and they wouldn't even specify
knew the anatomical parts.
Yes, or it's like just saying like, yeah, just a that's your privates or something. And it's like, well, which one are you talking about? Especially for the downstairs region, it's like butts, penises, vulvas, like they're all in close proximity. And so what are we even talking about? And like, yeah, a butt is a private part. And so are nipples. And so is your mouth, actually. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And that one can feel a little bit advanced, but it is important still that like it's still a cavity that things can go into. I mean, this is going to be like not the most eloquent conversation. Okay. So there's going to be things that.
Truth. And I think people need to know. And like I said, if this is too triggering, but when you work in the space of trauma, you would be shocked if you don't work with people to know how common this is.
Yeah.
And it's so sad, and it's so heartbreaking. And unfortunately, a lot of abuse with kids or older people, not older people, but like, you know, teenagers, you know, young adults, happen with people that you know and you invite into your home, that you know their names. They're not like strangers that like, yes, there are those. There are the predators, the strangers that like find your kids in different places. But it isn't always that, you know?
No, it's actually like, and I can't remember the number, but it's overwhelming majority is people that you know and that you have known and that you trust. Yeah. And, you know, whether that's like an uncle, a, you know, some other family member, literal blood relative. Brother, sister, babysitter. Yeah, babysitters. Yeah. You know, you would be blown away too, just about like the people that I know in my personal life, men who have been abused by babysitters. And it breaks my heart because you want to think that like an 18, 19, 20 year old girl, because that's how old they were at these times. Like these babysitters were like young teenage girls or, you know, older teenage girls, I guess. And it's like, you want to think that that would be probably one of the safest people you could put with your child. And it's just like, no, because things probably happened to her. And then she is just passing along this, you know, abuse and trauma into the other children in her life. And it's really, really hard to wrap your head around that idea, because it's like, surely she didn't enjoy it when it was happening probably. And it has traumatized her and she has a lot of shame around it. So like, why would you repeat it? But that's just the way that it goes. So,
yeah, or even just older kids, like,
yes.
I mean, you being like maybe you have a daughter who's 6 and then there's like an older boy who's 10 that they hang out with, you know, yes. And it's more of even like curiosity, but her experience of it is traumatic, right?
Right. Or like cousins or friends that are consistently over, your older child's friend who's always over in a room now with one of your younger children, something like that. I mean, not to freak anybody out, but this is a very common thing.
Oh, I think about it all the time.
Yeah. Like, and if this has been you in your life, you know, like, I'm so sorry that this has happened to you. And probably also you're like in a 20s or 30s adult and were raised in a culture where it was like hush, hush, figure it out on your own. Your parents probably never really talked to you about any of this. And then you also felt like, okay, this wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. And so I'm wrong. Or I am the problem. I did something here and I can't tell. Or maybe you even did try to tell your parents and they shut you down or they gaslit you and they told you that it didn't happen, which I feel like is another really common thing that kind of happened in like our parents' generation, which is wild to me. Yeah. But
especially if the accused is someone that they know or trust. Like,
yes.
You know, it's like, no, they would never do that or whatever. And it's like, then you are stuck, you know, navigating this on your own. So I'm just like highlighting that for anyone who's like, why would you even talk about this? This must be so rare. And it's like, and sadly, it's not.
It's not. It's not. And it's like the least that we can do to try and equip our children. And like, is it going to be a perfect thing? Is it always going to feel super comfortable for us as parents to be talking about these big topics with young kids? No, not necessarily. But sorry, like you got to, you have to. Mm-hmm. So it is my belief and yours too, I would say, just to speak for you, that children should know the anatomical terms of their bodies. Yeah. So I think it's also a common thing that like we in maybe our just generation or culture or whatever, we'll say like vagina to mean the whole thing, but the whole thing is called a vulva. So there's a delineation and a difference and we need to start getting that into our vocabulary now. And I mean, it was even tricky for me because it's just like, you know, you kind of always refer to that space as like your vagina, but you're not really talking about the whole all the time. You're talking about the whole thing. So for little girls, we can just call it your vulva. I'm going to wash your vulva. Like what I do with my little girls when we're in the shower is like butts and vulvas, and they wash themselves up and, you know, as soon as they can, as soon as I feel like they're doing a good enough job, they wash themselves. So I get a little squirt of the soap, I put it in their hands. They don't actually even sometimes need soap, but I mean, if they're pooping in a diaper and stuff, you know, you definitely need some soap around the booty. And so then I just start teaching them immediately how to do it. And I don't say vagina unless I'm speaking about the hole. And there has been a time where like something was hurting or itching or whatever. And so then we had to do a little bit further investigation. And I explained to them, hey, I'm your mom. And so I'm going to look at this. It's also a little bit easier for me because I'm a doctor, but I'll just say like, hey, let me see if there's anything happening. And I often also let them use their own hands to like show me where or explore the area, you know, like what are we talking about? What is happening? Because things do happen, you know, and we don't want to like completely put this weird energy of shame around those parts on our kids because they will pick up on it. If you're like weird around it, if you're like, no, don't ever talk about your vulva. Don't ever talk about your vagina.
Don't touch it.
Yeah. Nobody can touch it. Don't you touch it either. It's like, what's that message that we're translating to them? Is that this is like a bad thing? It's dirty. It's especially with, you know, religion, there can be a lot of shame that comes about, especially with like, I know that you were raised Catholic and that was a huge thing that there was like, never explore this area.
Don't look at it. It doesn't exist. But then it set me up for a lot of unfortunate things that happened in my life. So it's not like that protects your children. It doesn't. It just makes you ignorant and unprepared for the world.
Yeah. So. And then, or like, I feel like I was pretty sheltered and I can understand why my parents did it, but I didn't know so many things. And when I got to junior high, my junior high was 7th, 8th, 9th grade. I think I was a very like young 13-year-old anyway, like 17-year-old or whatever. I mean, sorry, 7th grader, 13-year-old. I was very like young, just, I was like a child still, you know, I love to like pretend that I was a dog and bark at my friends and that kind of thing. But it was such a wake up call for me. I know we're kind of like bouncing around topics, but I guess just to say the idea is that like we can be as the parents, the people to explain these concepts to your kids so that their friends are not the first person that's explaining these concepts. There is this idea. Well, are we giving them the idea or the permission that it's okay? Are we doing da da da? Like, how does this work? And it's like, listen, they will find out about it. They will. So you can let them find out about it through other people, or you can be the voice of reason and the first layer of exposure that's like, hey, this is what this is called. This is what this act means. This is what when you hear this number 69, this is what that means. And like, that's going to come later. You're not talking about this with a 3-year-old, but still the foundation is laid when they're young. So the very first basic thing we can do, it's a penis, it's testicles, or, you know, the scrotum. The testicles are the little balls that they feel inside, or they can call them balls, whatever, you know, like boys like to call it, whatever. But like penis, being correct about the anatomical terms. This is your vulva, this is your anus or your butthole and your butt, nipples, mouth. Obviously mouth is just like for many other things too, but at some point, the conversation should be layered in there. At some point, again, it's not early on, but you know where that can also come into play with this. And so this is like you're in the bathtub and you have a 2-year-old and you're like, show me your toes. And then they like wiggle their toes out of the bubbles. And then you're like, okay, where's your elbow? Or like an 18-month-old even, like little. You can do little kids. They know their body parts. Blink your eyes. Where are your eyes? Okay, where are your nipples? Okay, cool. Where's your butt? Point your butt. Okay, you know, and you're just, you have the same tone of voice. There's no shame.
Body part. Yep, exactly. Yep.
You're just, it's a body. It's just a body. And if we take all of our adult sexualized experiences and ideals around this out, for them, they don't know anything about that yet. So it's just these parts. And what we can say though, at some point we do start to layer on, these are private parts. Why do we cover them with underwear? Okay, well, they are private parts. And so, well, what does that mean? It means that they're parts for you and they're special parts of your body that like one day will help you make babies. So that's what I've always told my kids. I know that that's kind of my MO because of like the work that I do, but they also know that babies are coming out of vaginas well before that they know that sex is also involved with a vagina. Like that's just the way that it has happened for us, but it's like, it can be a little tricky and we trip up over our words. So I do think that this takes some intentionality as parents to be like, how am I going to explain this? How, and when the question comes around, what am I going to say? So it's like, well, you hide them because no one's supposed to see them. Like you don't say that, yeah. You know,
right.
And it is kind of tricky. And it's like, well, how come, you know, my kids have asked, well, why do boys get to wear bathing suits with no top? And they have nipples, but girls don't. And I say, well, because the girl's nipples will become boobs one day. So we cover them up because breasts are a private part. Mm-hmm. So your nipples are private parts, but men have nipples, but they don't feed babies. They don't become breasts to feed babies. So it's just not that way. And I just try to keep it really neutral. And it's like, just the way it is. Like, I'm just like, that's just what we do, you know? And then if I'm always curious and open to their questions, like actually my like older daughter, the 5-year-old, has asked me like, how do babies get inside? And my son has never asked that question. He has seen two of his siblings be born. And he knows, he's watched hundreds of births with me, you know, like on videos and stuff. And he's never asked how they get in. He definitely knows how they get out. He knows all about placentas and water breaking, and he knows about contractions and all these different things, but so you have to go age appropriate with them too. So like with her, I was not prepared. This was like probably a year ago, actually, that she was asking that question.
Yeah.
She just thinks differently. She connects a little bit different, and she wants to know the exact why things happen. And so your individual child will lead you on this topic too. And we'll get there in a minute of how to do that. But it's really important that we check our shame. And there's a really good 2-episode podcast interview on a podcast called The Place We Find Ourselves. And it's like a Christian psychotherapy podcast that I just absolutely love. I have learned so much. Whether or not you're Christian or believe in any, I don't feel that it's too like overbearing in that. You don't need to be subscribing to this religion in order for this to like make sense to you and really hit home. If you can, or if you do, great. If you don't, I think you're still going to get a lot of benefit out of it, is my point. So it is a 2-part series about how to talk to your kids about sex. And one of the things that he really hounds home with the person he's interviewing is that like your shame or any kind of weirdness that you feel about sex is going to directly translate to your child in the tone of your voice, the way your face looks, your affect, your body language, everything. If you do not like deal with it now before you're having these conversations, because it's so obvious and they are going to pick up on it. They are, if you're normally like a cool, chill parent or whatever, and then you walk into the room and you're like, we need to talk. And then you're so weird about it. And you're like, listen, Johnny, there's this thing and it's called sex and you're not allowed to do it until you're married and blah, 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 or whatever, you know? Yeah. And even if you're trying really hard to be like cool about it, you still just have to know that they will pick up on the fact that if you're uncomfortable. So you're going to just try to get yourself into a place that's as comfortable as possible every time this comes about. And let me tell you, when you start with a little young child, it's so much easier because you've had hundreds and hundreds of times of being like, oh, you know, even just, okay, who gets to touch your vulva, Sloan? I say that in the bath, you know, and she goes, mom and dad, if they're washing me, or the doctor, you know, and that's it. And I say, yeah, but you know what? Mom and dad, I don't even really need to wash you anymore, huh? You're a big girl. Like you wash yourself, right? Like we don't even, you know, we don't go there really, unless I need to look at it because there's something like upset, you know, wrong with it. It hurts or it itches. And like, that's okay. Cause that happens too. Does your elbow hurt sometimes? Yeah. Does this happen sometimes? Yeah, totally. So blah, blah, blah. Or when they start to explore pleasure and they're not stupid, they feel that things happen. And I also feel like this is one of those things I learned in the podcast was just the glaring difference in how culturally we handle little boys with their hands in their pants versus little girls with their hands in their pants. Little boys, it's written off as just like, oh, he's just being a little boy, like can't stop touching his penis, like whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like nobody ever, they laugh, they kind of think it's funny, it's sort of cute. And if a girl is doing it, if a girl's doing anything that could be potential masturbation or potentially anything that would look like that, it's like red alarms, stop, dirty, prostitute, slut. She's headed for being pregnant at 14. You know what I mean? It's like, whoa, yeah. What are we putting that on them. Yep. And it's really sad because why? This is okay. Another thing that I learned in that podcast, I will link this. You will listen to it and love it if you want to, is about when we do have that conversation about sex with little girls that we are emphasizing, not like hugely, but just that it's a part of the conversation because sometimes it's not, oftentimes it's not, the idea that it would feel good. And it should feel good. And that this is something that is pleasurable and connecting and loving. And you are an active participant in it and your want. And then this is where we talk about consent as well and all these different things. And that like it is different the way that it anatomically works. This is like conversations you're having with a teenager, right? Like your female body is different than a male body. And this also, you could, if you're like a nerd and you want to tie it into biology, it's like, this is actually how it goes with all of biological creatures, is that the sperm is in absolute multitudes. They are able to give it, or the seed, or whatever, the male part of the, say if it's a flower, a plant, an animal, whatever. That is kind of the male purpose in that point, is to just like give a ton of their DNA, and it can happen at any time. And the female, who's going to be then the one that's rearing the babies, or that's holding the eggs, or that's making the seeds, if it's a plant, whatever it is, has to be a lot more choosy and is usually the one that's making the like genetic decisions, depending on the type of plant or animal that we're talking about. And so they don't have that same capacity for sex and reproduction at all times. And it's slower, or it's different for them, or whatever. And like, we can help point to the fact that it's not just humans. It's all things. Like mammals aren't just constantly in heat. They have to go in heat, you know, in order to be able to make babies. And yes, do some animals have sex outside of the point of reproduction? Sometimes, yes, like dolphins and monkeys and different things like that. But typically it's just for reproduction. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways that we can tie this in if we're worried about shame, or if we're worried about how do we explain this to our kids in a way that's like, no, this is literal biology. And I remember too, in college, one of our friends was dating a guy that was in vet school. And she explained to him, because he's like such a like biology guy, about her libido and how it spikes around ovulation. And it was just something at the point that he hadn't really thought about. And she's like, well, but this is the only time of the month that I can get pregnant. So like, it makes sense that this would be the time of the month that I actually really want to have sex. And that's the experience for so many people. And it's like, well, yeah, that's biology. And for him, it just like really helped click in him understand, because men are not that way. They're on a 24-hour cycle. Any day of the week, they're going, and we are not. And so that's just, again, I kind of am getting ahead of myself, but I think that these are things that we need to, because there's so much out there that's like, women should be having sex with their husbands three times a week, no matter what. And there's no reason why you shouldn't be doing that. And especially once we become moms and postpartum and hormones and breastfeeding and how breastfeeding plays into this, it's still something that I feel like, oh my God, I'm, you know, and I have to check myself and be like, no.
Yeah,
but it's the way that our culture is.
Shame.
Yeah, shame. And for women, it's so laced with shame. And for men, it's just not. And and we need to be trying to break that cycle.
Yep.
Okay, so back to little kids. So we teach them their correct body parts. We try to give them body autonomy as soon as we can. So if they are able to wipe or wash themselves, they are learning that process as soon as possible. We are also giving them the language about what to do if something does happen, right?
Yeah.
So this is sometimes a piece that can be missed, is that little kids are told, no one's supposed to touch you there. You're not ever supposed to see anybody else's private parts. Okay, what are those private parts? It's a penis, butt, vulva, breast, you know, whatever. You're never supposed to see anything. And no one is ever supposed to see you or touch you. And you're never supposed to touch anybody else. End of story, period. It is like, well, wait, but what happens if it does happen? Then you want to be able to create this open door where they know exactly what to do. They, in their little tiny toddler brains, I know this sounds so sad that we even need to consider this, but it is real. Then in their toddler brains, they go, okay, this wasn't supposed to happen and it did. And I go tell mom and dad and I won't be in trouble.
Yeah.
So it's always something that, and you can even take it a step further as they get older and you say, the person who might have done this to you will tell you you'll get in trouble. They'll tell you all these things that are not true. You know, you can always come to me and you always tell me anything and I will never, ever punish you. You will never be in trouble for this.
Because it's not your fault. I cry. It's like so emotional. But yeah, so what do you do? Because that's like where I'm at right now. You know, my daughter's three. She's around a lot of older kids. Mm. And so how would you like go about that exactly? Like, so we're teaching her the parts and then you say, like, give me like a script of an idea of like what to tell her.
Yeah. So it's another thing I think that I've found over time is just that these conversations work best in like a totally casual, normal, like you're on a walk.
Yeah. You're not like sitting them down.
Like, yeah. You're in the bath and you bring it up every couple baths that you have, or you're like naming parts and then you're talking about some scenarios and whatever. Or you're like on a walk and you're holding hands and you're talking about their school or their dreams or whatever. And then you say, hey, did you know that, or you just say, hey, like, I'm going to ask you some questions. Who's allowed to touch your vulva? What? And then see what they say, you know, and then sort of like, if we need to guide that scenario, if they're like, no one, or if they're like, everyone, you know, what do we say? It's like, well, sometimes there may be a situation where we do need to, because like a doctor situation, and you can say, I go to the doctor sometimes, and there's a doctor that looks at mine and makes sure that everything's fine, especially if I'm having a problem. Because these are parts of our bodies, and your tummy might hurt sometimes, and your vulva can hurt sometimes, or your butt can hurt sometimes. And so we need to go and get that looked at. And that's okay. That happens. And that happens to me. That is another thing that's really, really helpful, I think, with kids, is like knowing that it happens to their parents, or it has happened to their parents. Like, I've also had like this weird sensation there and whatever. Not that you need to relate with them if they get sexually abused. You don't need to tell them that like that has happened to them to you too. But I just mean that some of these like little things that can just help breed trust too between you and the parents. So anyway, say you're on a walk and you're like, who gets to touch you there? Okay. Do you know what to do if somebody does touch you there? Okay. This is also going to be like, not everyone is going to agree with me about this, but that's okay. And they say, I come tell you, or maybe they don't know. And then you're giving them the script. You're saying, okay, Avia, if anybody ever touches your vulva and it's not me or daddy or the doctor, you can come right to me and you tell me exactly what happened and you will never be in trouble. No matter what that person says, you come and you tell me, because that's something that I need to know. And I would love for you to tell me that. Please tell me that. Or if they touch you here, if they touch you there. And then I insert people's names who live around us and with us and are friends who are around all the time, because those are the people who would be most likely to be the people. And not that I think that these people would do that. And I'm careful not to like make it sound like I think that, you know, this man or this friend or whatever particular person is scary. I'm not trying to breathe that in them. I'm just using real life people to put it a little bit more real with them. And that's something that I do when they're older too. I'll be like, what happens if this person does? What happens if this person does? Because they know, they also know that they love and trust these people. And if it happened with one of them, it might feel different and they may not tell you, or they may feel it's harder. So
like
I literally
only a stranger does it or something.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, it's not always just a stranger. And now a moment from our sponsor. If you are looking for a delicious and effective immune supplement that your entire family can use, from children through adults and even while pregnant and breastfeeding, look no further than the Needed Immune Support Powder. With elderberry, zinc, pre and probiotics, beta-glucans, and arabinogalactans, the Needed Immune Support Powder is a very tasty berry treat that you can easily mix into water, yogurt, popsicle recipes, smoothies, gummies, and more. It's something that I always have on hand and give at the first sign of illness to any of my children as well as myself. Give it a try by visiting thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. We do talk about stranger stuff too. Like, what would you do when you're at the playground if somebody just like picked you up and started running away and you don't know who they are? What do you do? And it doesn't have to be really scary. I know that these things can be scary. And I feel like as a kid, it was really important to my parents to drill some of these things into my head. And I feel like it was a little intense sometimes because it was like a lot of worry around that. And so I'm careful to be able to do it, walk them through some things, but in a way where we're just rapid firing some situations.
Yeah, you just mention it casually so that it's like they've at least heard a pass of it a few times where they it would register in their brain, but it's not like this really intense thing that's like scaring them all the time.
Exactly. Like you're just saying, okay, what do you do if there's a fire in the house? Like just, you know, we have to have these scenarios because if your kid has never thought about what do I do? Like I even just, it dawned on me the other day that I had never had this conversation with our 8-year-old. Like if you woke up in the middle of the night and you smelled smoke and your door was closed, what would you do? Like you go up and you touch the door or the door handle. And if it's hot, you do not open it.
Yeah.
Do not open it. If there's smoke billowing into your room, you get on the ground because the ground is where there's going to be like the cleanest air. Here's how to open your window. Like just basic stuff I had not taught him. And I'm like, holy shit, like that could have been, you know, I mean, at some point we do need to walk through some of these emergency situations with them. Again, not freaking them out, but like we all went to like stop, drop and roll, fireplace, you know, whatever. And the same thing with these kinds of conversations with other kids and whatever. So anyway, that's kind of how I would do it. I would just like pull it into like a totally normal conversation. And then you keep it short. It's like 30 seconds because they just can't handle that much. And then you, boom, you just like flit onto like another topic so that it's really neutral.
Yeah.
It's not weird. There wasn't, your body language didn't change. Mom's energy didn't change. She wasn't weird, blah, blah, blah. So it just is like a positive. It's a positive experience and it's layers, thin, extremely thin, almost clear layers that we have to just slowly drip into their minds about like, how do we handle these situations? Okay. So then as they get older too, we can start talking about more like body bubble concepts. So like you are the space and energy right around you and everybody has one of those. And so there's going to be times when people tell you, no, don't touch me or stop, or they don't want to be hugged or they don't want to wrestle. And you must listen to them when they say no. This is an absolute rule in my house, especially because I do have a boy and 3 little girls and he's the older one. It's not like lost on me what could happen in that scenario. And so it's like, and just with him and his general growing up, like no means no 100% of the time and stop game.
Yep.
Now, what I have also tried to teach, because it's common for kids to like say no, but they're playing, is I'm like, you can't say no then. That's not the word you're going to say. You can say like, or you need to make it really clear, like, okay, Gage, we're going to play this game and like, I'm going to say no and stop, but I'm really like, I really want you to do that. They're old enough now that they can have that kind of, if they're playing like, they play like prisoner guard and just, you know, stuff like weird stuff sometimes, or they play like right now they're playing like with mythical, is, you know, it's like around Halloween, so they're playing around like mythical creatures like coming out of the forest and stuff, like stuff that I'm like, this is, you guys are weird and this is scary, but like sure. But you know what I mean, I try to at least have that conversation where I'm like, I'm hearing, or if I can hear it happening, they're playing and I'm like, I hear somebody saying no, I hear somebody saying stop, what do we do? And I'm just, again, you're going to explain this to them again and again and again and again. They're not always going to get it right. They're not always going to listen. It's something that we as parents have to continue to drill in. Same thing goes with like giving hugs and kisses to kids, or like, you know, with grandparents and stuff. This is something that I feel like comes up on social media a lot, is like, oh, well, my kid didn't want to give grandpa a hug, and it's like, or grandma a kiss or whatever. And the idea of not forcing them and not being like, you must go give grandpa a hug, you must go give grandma a kiss. Like, No. They can say, do you want to give me a hug? Cause sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And this is like the very most basic minimal way that we can show that we respect them from early on and that their opinion matters about their body because it does. And that as little children too, is one of the only things that they have control over is like some of the stuff around their body, you know, what they wear, if they want to pick out what they want to wear, let them let them dress themselves. If they, and obviously if it's outside of the realm of what should be appropriate for the weather, then correct it in that kind of a way. Or if it's like, I don't know, like not enough clothing for, you know, it's not appropriate, but otherwise, like these are little ways that we are able to instill in our children that their opinion and voice matters, their bodies matter. Just because we are adults doesn't mean we get to override all of their body boundaries, because some kids grow up in that kind of a household, and that's another barrier to, or not barrier, entryway into abuse, is that they've kind of just grown up thinking, well, adults get to do whatever they want with me. Adults get to pick me up. They get to kiss me. They get to throw me around. They get to dress me. They get to do whatever they want. And I don't get to say because I've never had that voice and I've never been able to say. And so when an adult is touching me in an inappropriate place, I just like, this just must be normal.
Yeah. And even like the no means no, I think it's important for like even dads that play with kids to have a word, like when you're tickling or when you're whatever, where you teach them early on, like we've been doing this with Avia, where it's like, if you say stop, and I've talked to my husband about this, like if he's tickling her or whatever, it's like, you can tell that she wants him to.
Yes.
I need to teach her. If you say stop, daddy stops 100%. If you are playing and it's funny and you like still want him to keep tickling, you know, we pick a different word.
Right, right.
Because even it doesn't even have to be with like other kids, but even with like adults and your parents, because if you as a kid are saying like stop, 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 and they don't listen because they just think it's funny and they think you like it, it's all of these little things that add up to like what you're saying. There's no body autonomy and there's subtle messages that get layered on. Like you're talking about, these layers are so important. If you don't have these positive experiences, then it's all of these other negative experiences that get layered. And then you end up, you know, as a teenager and wonder how these things happen. When you look back on your childhood, like that's in my mind, it's like my parents did anything wrong. You know, looking back, they didn't know any better. It was just like how they were parented. But there were so many experiences that I had, like 100%. We used to have to hug all of the people in our family. I felt so uncomfortable around certain people. And it was like, you were forced to hug them, but goodbye. And I didn't
because
want
it's
to.
Respectful. They think it's disrespectful to those older people, the older family members. And it's like, I can see why they think that, but it's just, this is a cultural thing we've learned where it's like, no, sorry, that's not happening. Like there is no, like my child does not have an allegiance to giving a hug to anybody. And same thing with like, I feel like the friends that we have around us are really good at this. Like when we're saying goodbye from a play date, it'll be like, do you want to give me a high five? You want to give me an elbow bump, like fist bump, like, you know, to say goodbye to the other kids. It's like, I want to acknowledge my friends, other kids. Yes, of course I would love to hug them all, but they may not want to hug me and that's okay. And so offering something else. Now this mindset can get really like a slippery slope. And there are people out there that are like on this very strong consent culture mindset of things, which I don't feel like is probably harmful, but I don't think it's realistic. And so I'm not really going to be talking about that, but that's where like every interaction with your child, you're asking permission for everything. Can I wipe your face off? Can I brush your teeth? Can I brush your hair? I'm going to touch you now. Is that okay with you? Like all the, it's just exhausting. I don't feel like it's realistic. We can bring it in certain ways that we can, but you don't have to hold yourself to this, like, because sometimes also we are the parents and like there will be times where they have to take medicine or something and they don't get to choose.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I know you probably don't want to wash the mud all off of your arms and legs, but I am going to keep you clean because I'm your parent, or like, I'm going to wash your hair because it's dirty now or whatever. There are things that have to happen. I have to clip your toenails. I have to clip your fingernails. Okay. I'm going to do it. You can give them certain choices. Do you want me to do the left hand or the right hand? You know, you do give them some power, but it doesn't mean that you just like never touch them because they can just be, no, they are children. They still need to be taken care of. And a lot of that is like hygiene stuff. We need to teach them how to do things and we need to wipe their butts when they have poop all over their butt because they poop. Like you can't not do that, you know? So anyways, okay. So then there's several books that I really, really love for this too, that I think having around in the house is helpful. Also, some parents just like love having a book option to point to for some of this information. So one for little kids that's really great, and again, these will all be linked, but it's called Amazing You, and it's for probably like 2 to 8 year olds or something. Like it'll phase out where it's not that interesting for an older child, but it just shows cartoon pictures of like a boy and a girl and their parts. It does show, I have this all written down. You don't need to write it down. It's okay. It does show also there's like this double page spread, which we used to find open all the time, like just in random places around our house where like the older ones were looking at it, which is fine. It's like whatever, where it shows like a toddler child, an adult woman, and a toddler child, an adult man. And how like puberty, like, you know, this concept of puberty, what is puberty and what's happening and why does it, and obviously that's a bit of an older conversation too, but just the idea that it changes because your child is not dumb. They have eyes. They see you. If unless you're hiding your naked body from them constantly, they see your boobs, they see your pubic hair. They're like, why don't I have that? Why do I look different from you? And if we act super weird around it all the time, what are they going to think? The message is that this is weird and that this is wrong or bad, or you're not supposed to see it. If you just are neutral about it and you're like, there will come a time at some point where your older child who's 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever age will begin to have their own body privacy and they won't want you to see them naked anymore. And then you can also then be like, at some point, whatever is comfortable for you, be like, I also now don't want you to see me naked. So I'm going to like, if I hear you coming down the hallway and I'm in the shower, I'm going to like turn around, you know, stuff like that. But you don't really do that with a 2-year-old because like, come on, it's just not realistic, you know? But so in the book, it just is really neutral. It just talks about like the differences between boys and girls. It does have a page where it's like sperm meets egg and that's how a baby's made. It does not say anything about how that the sperm meets the egg, but it just says that like inside of testicles, there's these little seeds and inside of ovaries, there's these little eggs. And so like my 2 girls that don't know much beyond that, but they always say, they're like, mom, I have baby seeds. I have baby eggs and I'm going to become a mom like you one time because I have baby eggs in me right now. And I'm like, yeah, you do.
Yeah,
you do.
So early because I'm pregnant and my daughter, I mean, she started at 2, right? She was just newly 2 and she would play that she was pregnant all the time, that her baby was in her belly and that her baby was going to come out. And, you know, she knows that babies come out of vaginas. Like, yeah. I don't know if she like actually conceptualizes it, but she talks about it. And right now, you know, she says, mommy, your nipples are so big. And I'm like, I know, they're for feeding baby Cade, you yes. know, they're going to feed him. And she's exactly. just like so neutral and so just like, you know, and it's just how it is. And
because you're being matter of fact and same yeah. thing, like my kids have been saying things about my body, which I don't even agree with, but they'll be, you know, they come and they pat my belly and they're like, you have another baby in there or something. Cause maybe it pooches out a little bit, or like my son will jiggle my legs or jiggle my butt, my underwear or something. He'll be like, why is your butt so jiggly? And I, you know, you could get offended by that. And I do try to still instill in him. I'm like, yo, listen, you can't say that to anybody else besides me, because yeah. that would also, it does kind of hurt my, I'm like, I really also kind of like keep those thoughts to yourself. You could never say that to somebody else though, because that could really, really offend and hurt somebody's feelings. It would be like me making fun of your hair or something that you really take pride in. And I take pride in my body. And also, do you know what that fat is going to become? That fat is going to become the breast milk for Sunday. And I explain these things and I try to just stay really neutral about it. I'm not like, yeah, I hate my body. Like that's another thing that comes up with this, especially with little girls. They watch you. They hear yep. everything you say. If you look in the mirror constantly and are like, oh, I look like crap. Oh, look at my wrinkles, my mirrors. Look at my cellulite, my love handles, my da da da. If you're constantly commenting negative about your body, what do you think your little girl is going to think about her own body? Yep. We must be cognizant of these types of things. When you look in the mirror, either say nothing or smile or say something like, I look at how strong my legs have gotten because I've been running a lot lately, or like, whatever. I like the way that this top feels on me. I feel really good in this color. I da da da. You know, you could say something positive, but if you can't say anything positive because you don't feel it or you don't know how, don't say anything at all. Just yep. smile at yourself and then walk away, because you will do more damage in trying to do anything else, because these little subconscious things matter. This episode is not to make you feel like you have to be so hyper aware and like that you're doing things wrong, but we do also have to have like intentionality around it. And I think that's like the whole point of our podcast episodes, is that yep. we do need to be intentional about this stuff. So that book is a really good one. Now there's another one that's good for little kids that's called My Body, What I Say Goes. And this is kind of the concept. It's introducing the idea of body boundaries and bubbles and like when, what no means and all that kind of thing. Then there's a version of that same book that's for older kids, which again, I'm going to link, that's called Let's Talk About Body Boundaries. It's kind of wordy. It's a little bit long. It's hard to kind of keep the attention span of your kids. So I sort of pop around in that book. I can't really ever just sit down and read the whole thing. It would probably be good, better for like 6 to 8 year olds somewhere, or 6 to 10. I don't know. A little on the older side of things. Then there are these books about porn exposure and pictures and things that I think are really good. There's, it's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. Junior, and then there's a regular one or something like that. Bad pictures, good pictures, something like that. Again, it'll be in the show notes. But this is something that is new for my family that we've just brought in, is the idea of, okay, you might be around a friend, older child, 8, 9-year-old, who has a phone. And or you might pick up one of our phones because you're trying to look up something about a baseball player stat, but you mistype something and you're in Google Images and you see something crazy. Like, that's how that happens, you know? And yes, we have the settings on our phones as best as possible for the safe search and different stuff like that, whatever. But it's also the reality of my work that I see a lot of people giving birth and there's a lot of nakedness in female pictures that are around. And I do explain to him that that's different from these because it is women giving birth in this, like, you know, this is a natural situation. Yes, sex is natural too. But, and I haven't gotten to this. This is my next layer of conversation I'm about to have with him, which is that, like, in situations where we see pictures of people having sex, because he does know what sex is, often these people are not, they are not enjoying it, especially the women. It is not something that they want to be doing. Even if they were, it's still not something for your eyes. And this is called porn. And it is like, you have to name it. You have to say the word. You have to say, if you see a picture of an adult man or adult woman naked or together or two men or two women or multiple people or whatever you're seeing, like, what do we do? So then this book, it outlines this little protocol. And I've even talked about this now with my 4-year-old. I'm like, what happens if you see a naked picture of people? And she says, I close my eyes and I turn around. Like, literally, it gives you step by step. I close my eyes immediately and I turn around and I go and I find and I tell mom and dad and I'll never be in trouble. And she always says that, like, last bit.
I'll never be in trouble.
I'm like, yes, exactly. Like, it is not your fault that you've seen this. Or even if you searched it out and you were curious and you were looking at it, I still want you to tell me because we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
We need to talk about. And then, of course, this leads into like an entire conversation, which we could have about how early porn exposure and just porn exposure in general completely rewires brains, usually for men, and affects their ability for sex and pleasure for their entire life. Yeah. In a negative way. And I know some people are gonna be like, oh my God, whatever. I watch porn. My husband watches porn and has forever and he's totally fine. Cool. Great. Good for you. You're gonna do whatever you're gonna do. I think that it's more damaging than you're maybe like giving, and also for children. Okay. More specifically for children, we do not want them to be seeing these things. That's just not the entry into this conversation, right? Especially because it's almost always depicted in this way that is like not the way that women want to have sex anyways. So there's that too. Then when we get in the conversation of like how to actually talk to your kids about sex, so not just body boundaries and not just body safety type stuff, like we're actually going to be saying, okay, this is what the idea of sex is. There's a really good book that's called It's Not the Stork. Now, there are so many different books out there about this. And there is also a lot of content and books that will talk about different types of sex, like lesbian sex, gay sex, et cetera. I personally am going to layer those conversations in later. And I feel like there is benefit to that because when we are introducing such a large topic, we need to keep it as basic as possible and with what is the most common scenario and what are they going to mostly see. Now, if in your circle there is, it's not that way, it's mostly non-heterosexual couples, then obviously that will make most sense for your child. But I'm just like, okay, as much as I am supportive, I also am not bringing those types of conversations in at this age yet, because yeah, I still want them to get a basic of like, what are we even talking about? Then we can talk about for the purpose of reproduction too. Like, it's all around this idea of reproduction for right now. And that's it, you know, just to try to keep it innocent and as much as possible. Yeah. I do say things like, it feels good. Which, you know, is that the conversation with him is going to go down as one of my very favorite parenting moments ever. And it was so sweet. And I had just become pregnant with Sunday. So he was just turned 7, which is young. But I felt like he's always the youngest in all of his circles and he needs to know. And it was just the most basic level. But some of the things that, you know, the questions he had and stuff like that, I'm like, oh my God, you're so sweet. And it was so funny. He's like, Mom, you've had sex 4 times. You and Daddy have sex 4 times because I was pregnant with my 4th baby and I'm just like, oh, bless your sweet soul. You're so cute. It's so cute. But But yeah, because that in his mind, it was for the purpose of making a baby. So like, you know, we talked about, you know, we've gone more through there, but that book, It's Not the Stork, is definitely very heterosexual. So if you're looking for something different, that's not it. But what I like about it is that it's just these like little blurbs. It's clearly written for a child. The pictures are like little cartoon people. And it's like when people are in a loving relationship, like that's kind of the emphasis, right? It doesn't say that you have to be married or, but it's just, it really, really is not like about casual sex. It's like, why does this happen? And it also mentions things like erections and which little boys experience from like the get-go, which was always a surprise to me too, with having a little infant boy, that your boy will get erections and it's like normal and it will happen. And when they are older and then they're like, what is happening to me? It's nice to be able to give that a name and also not shame them and say, this happens. Yeah, your penis will get hard and it can kind of be uncomfortable and it'll be hard to pee when this happens. And then it goes back down. And if they're like, why does it happen? That's a little bit of a trickier concept. But you can just say that it's a natural, normal part of your body and it happens to daddy too. You don't even have to actually say why. If they continue to really dig you and say, but why, maybe they're ready for that more advanced conversation. Let your child lead you. Like, let them be the cat. Like, you say a little bit and you wait and you pause and you see how that lands on them. And if they're like, okay, whatever, and then they go back to playing, then you're done. You're done with that conversation.
That's such a good point, because I feel like you could feel so uncomfortable about this topic that you're like, oh my God, I have to say it all right now, because like, we started this conversation and we need to get it all out. And then it's so overwhelming to them and they're like, what in the world? Like,
yes.
I love these like tiny micro exposures.
Yes.
Because I was not raised like this. And so just like when people do the things that they were raised like, if they don't know any other way, it's like, I wouldn't even think about it, you know?
Yes.
So learning from other people who are doing it differently is so helpful to be like, okay, we just need to talk about little exposures, keep it neutral, like tiny layers, let them guide you, say a little thing, let them like probe. I have a question, but I don't know if I should ask it now or wait till you continue. So like for Avia right now, I don't know if it's because of school or being around other kids or because of our energy. I don't know. I try to be as neutral as possible, but anytime I bring up, you know, butts or vulvas or whatever, she gets super silly, you know, and she'll be like, poo poo butt, you know?
Yeah.
And if she does that in public, like, how do you, like, what happens when they're like being silly or being like inappropriate sort of around that without shaming them? But also, I mean, I don't want to like running around in public being like poo poo butt. You know, like, she's totally so funny, because sometimes I'm like, Avi, we don't say that, you know, all the time in public, like, but she thinks that's hilarious that I have a response to it. So do I just ignore it to get her to like not think it's funny?
Yeah,
like,
no, that's a really good question, because all kids do that. I feel like they all go through a phase where butt and poop and fart is so funny, and it can last years. I'm still in it. And I think it feels a little different to me than now. Yeah. When there's penis and vulva talk, no. I did have to like put the kibosh on in my house, you know, because it was also starting to like come out with friends. They were starting to like, the poop butt is, I feel, more neutral because everyone has a butt.
Yeah.
And everyone poops, boys and girls.
Like Avi would be like, daddy has a vulva, and then would laugh.
Yeah. And it's like, ha. Yeah. You can say like, ha, that's why.
Like, oh, this is getting, like, I don't know how to deal with this now, you know?
Okay. So if it's like a power play because she's just trying to be like kind of get under your skin, you can just be like, Avi, we don't talk about that right now. And you also know that daddy has a penis. And then you do, I would probably just ignore it.
Yeah.
I think there is definitely a huge level of normalcy with butt and poop talk. And again, I think because both boys and girls, everybody has a butt and poop, it's sort of like you'll find your level where you're like, this is too much, you guys need to stop. Or it's like, whatever, it doesn't bother you. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's just something that they all have to go through. It's tricky. But I do think there is certain things that can be like where it's taken to like a weird level. And then I always do like kind of nip those conversations about them.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're not talking about this anymore.
About it. Like, yeah, that's super helpful.
This is not appropriate. You guys can think that butts and poops are funny, but now we're getting inappropriate. And so there, I'm starting to bring in that word of like, what does inappropriate mean? It's like, well, we're getting outside of the privacy thing. Also, when you have multiple kids, like little moments of privacy about like closing the door when they're going to the bathroom is another big way to just show that we respect people when they're having their bathroom activities. That's another way that you can say it. Like, why do we put underwear on these parts or something? And it's like, well, this is where we pee and we poop. And so they're special. They're special parts. And this is, and so we need to take like a little bit of extra care of them. And we do keep them hidden. And like, it's a little bit more private because like, it's not really fun to have people watching you when you're pooping, right? Like you could even just take that layer for a period of time when they're really young. You know, because that's true.
Yeah.
Like they don't know anything about the sexuality of it, but it is true that those are our elimination organs as well. And so there is a layer to that.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if that answers your question. Talking about sex, I just had that.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. I think that a book can be helpful or you can just start in on it. And again, it is not this one big time bomb Hiroshima of a slam dunk conversation. It is teeny little snippets. Oh, did you know? Okay. Say you live in a farm like me or out rural and you see animals mating. Or it's springtime and it's like, where are all these baby bunnies coming from? You can even just start talking about it with mammals and animals and like, what is an egg and how does that happen? Or a seed. And you know, it's these little things like they're getting it. They're picking it up on like, how are new humans made? How are new plants made? How are new puppies made? And you can then be like, this is called mating when it's animals and it's called sex when it's humans. Because humans do the same thing because how did I get pregnant with your little brother? Or how did it, da, da, da. It's like, that we do the same thing and it's how we make new humans. And if they're like, what? Or blah, you know, you kind of like lead again, follow their lead into it. And then, you know, up to your comfortability of what you're going to talk about in terms of like what happens in your own home necessarily. But again, it's just, is it age appropriate for them? Letting them go with it. And then also kind of checking back in. So they may not ask you anything about it after you've kind of had that one conversation. They might be a little bit like blown away and sort of like not want to talk about it again, but you can bring it back up and be like, hey, I found that book again. Just make it easy on yourself. Hey, I just was cleaning up the play area and I found this book again. Do you have any questions about sex? I just wanted to recheck back in. We haven't talked about it in a little while. Or like, do you remember what sex is? Can you tell me what sex is? Like, let's talk about it. Do you like, what do you remember? Or what was kind of confusing or like, has anyone ever talked about it with you? In addition to this, and like, you know, you just sort of keep this line of communication open as much as you can. And know that like all the things that we know about adults and sexuality and the really kind of like grotesque aspects that can happen with sex, like they don't know about that and they don't need to know about that yet. And it's okay. And like, they just need to know the basics of what happens with these body parts. It's special. I personally do. I mean, everybody's going to take their own layer with this. And also it intersects with religion oftentimes, but like, I do think that it's important to emphasize that it's like a special loving part of a really, really important relationship. And it feels good to both people. And it also is important because it is how babies are made and that it's like something that adults do that you'll get to do when you're an adult and that like children do not do this. You will do it later on and you'll love it. It'll be awesome, you know? And then they're like, what? Like, what do you mean I'm never going to love that? And you're like, well, okay. You think that now. But yeah, like depending on where you're at, you're going to just pull more in about all of those different topics. And I'm not there yet, so I can't really even speak to that. Like the teenage level stuff, I don't know. But this is more just how do we introduce these topics in these like kind of benign ways so we can get in front of it so that we can also protect them from things like porn. So we want to protect them from unnecessary exposures and abuse. And so they have to have had some knowledge about this stuff in order for that to be the case. Yeah. Starting out with like anatomical terms and body boundaries and giving them little autonomy here and there, whatever you can, are skiffs of snow on the mountain of snow, right? Like it's important. And without them, you won't have this big mountain of knowledge, but they can feel insignificant sometimes. And it's just not, just trust me, it's not. Of course, there's always more that we can do. But I also think that this plays into the conversation about like women later on. And this is, you know, our generation, I feel like was really the ones that got the short end of the stick with this situation was about menstrual health and your cycle and your period. And, you know, my kids see me. I just am not a private person in general. They see me taking out a tampon sometimes. They're like, what is that? Or they see me, they see it hanging the string or they see a pad or they see whatever.
Yeah.
And so I mean, even from young ages, it's not weird because I didn't make it weird, but I just say every month I didn't get pregnant, I bleed for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And so does every other mammal in the world. Like, actually, I don't even know if that's true, if every other mammal does, but like, you know, now they've had this experience with our dog being the sire to a litter of puppies with our friend's dog. And like, there's been so many conversations around that about like Daphne getting pregnant from Doug, and well, Daphne sometimes bleeds and then she has like, she wears a little diaper for a couple days, a couple times a year. And, you know, you can pull it in and bring it in these different ways, but it's like, it's not weird. It's like, yeah, you one time, 5-year-old, you'll get your period at some point and it's not a big deal and it shouldn't hurt. And if it does, we'll fix that, you know? And then the idea of teaching little girls. I mean, imagine, I can't imagine. I was almost 15 when I got my cycle. So, and I was like begging for it. I just was such a late bloomer in every single way. I was like, oh my God, I want boobs and I want my period so bad. Still never really got boobs, but that's okay. I want, it's my hope and dream and wish, right? That we can have conversations with our little girls that are not, it's not weird because we've had years and years and years of having conversations about their bodies in very intimate ways where we can teach them about pregnancy prevention and understanding their cycle very intimately and deeply, and it won't be an issue in that kind of a way, right? Like,
Could you imagine that world? That would be so amazing.
Yeah, if we had all gotten that instead of just slapped on birth control for like literally no reason.
And you don't even know how you get pregnant.
Yeah, it's like just, I don't know, everything's changing and shifting, and body literacy, literacy meaning like the ability to read or understand a concept, right? And so body literacy is this idea of being able to understand deeply, like in not just like a superficial layer and way, your physiology. And it's, I think also little boys should know about it. They should understand too. And it's like, why not? And so, I mean, in my house, because there's one boy and three little girls, he's going to know, you know, he's going to know. But even if it was a house of all boys, you as the mother are still able to model and explain what's happening in your body. And, I think so much of it that we've put so much like cultural weirdness around our bodies, around sex, around our private parts, around what our bodies look like and what they do and the function. And not to say that we need to be like just really flippant and like sexual freedom and just go and have sex doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you choose to have sex with. I don't believe that. And I know you don't either, but like, that's not the goal with this. The goal is to be like, this is a sacred, amazing, beautiful process that you do not need to be in shame around. And like understand it so that you can utilize it and you can have good, healthy experiences and you can have a healthy relationship with your body and with sex, because sex can be wonderful and amazing. But so many little girls did not get that memo or never have, or it never was able to be that way because their first experiences of it were bad. Mm-hmm. And it's like, golly, like, and you know, also, of course, I know that this is like obvious, but I just have to say it. You may do all of this and something may happen to your child still. And that's obviously like, it's tragic and heartbreaking no matter what happens. But I do feel that the research is pro in this camp, that giving them the tools and giving them the voice to say no, and then giving them the voice to be able to say, Uncle Joe, mom, Uncle Joe, like, was standing in the kitchen and his penis was out. Or something, you know, it may even just be something like that. Or like, he was touching his penis in the bathroom. He was watching me when I was peeing, and he like, that's how it can happen. I know. And like, if they don't have the language to be able to say that, and also to know that that would be unusual, they're not going to tell you, and they're not going to know, and they're not going to feel safe that they can even tell you, because if your reaction is going to be like, blah, 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 you know, your reaction cannot freak out. You have to be like, okay, tell me. Okay. Another thing, actually, this is kind of tricky and I don't really have like a lot of wisdom around this, but one thing that came up in a conversation with one of my kids was about, well, who gets in trouble? And I was like, the other person gets in trouble. And then the response was, but I don't want, what if I didn't want them to get in trouble?
Oh, interesting.
Like going to jail. Like that was the, what I had said was like, well, that person would go to jail. And the, you know, my kid who's like major empath was like, well, what if,
like, and we're going to tell because I don't, because I like this person.
Yes. And I was using an example of like a close friend or family member, you know, who is around often. So it just as like an example, again, not because I think that these people would do it. I really, really, really want to hound that in. I'm just trying to be realistic and also living on this like compound where there's people in and out of my house constantly. There's so many friends over constantly. There's a lot of older boys constantly in my house and I have little girls, and it's like, what does that look like? And I'm not ignorant to the fact that this could be a situation. So I sometimes use names. Maybe that's my bad. I shouldn't use that. But I always also follow up and I say, I do not think this is going to happen. I just want you to think about, well, what, like, that's how it would happen. You know, is it could just be one of your friends. It's not going to be the mailman that is somehow walking into my house doing this to you. That's not what's going to happen, most likely. Right. So anyway, but it was an interesting note that I hadn't thought about, which was like your child potentially wanting to protect that person.
Or them saying like, don't tell anyone because then I will go away and I won't be able to see you again.
Yes.
You know, yes. Like those kind of languages. That's interesting. I would love to be able to ask.
Like an expert. We need to get an expert on here and then we'll ask them.
Like, how do you handle that? Because that's a good question. Like, maybe you just don't say, you'd be like, well, we would talk about it at the time or something. Like,
yeah, exactly. I kind of feel like I went a little bit
like, oh my God, I can't tell because they'll get in trouble or something. Just be like, you to come to me, like, you know, you're not going to get in trouble. You know, who would get in trouble? Well, we would just talk about it at the time. You know,
yes,
we would,
exactly. Like something.
But really vague.
I think I just needed. I was a little hardcore. I think about it, to be honest. And then also one other thing that is a little bit tricky is, and something that can come about in a little bit of a later on age in conversation is, well, what if you liked it? Like, what if it felt good? And to delineate the idea that there are parts of our bodies where it does feel good when they're touched. And it doesn't mean that like you still deserved that interaction, or yes, just because you like you may not have wanted it to happen, or even if you sort of did want it to happen, it still wasn't appropriate because you're a child. This is not appropriate experience for a child to have, only when you're an adult in a loving relationship. So,
or if it felt good, it doesn't mean that you asked for it or that you're.
Yes.
I mean, that comes up with like female rape all the time.
All the time.
A lot of women are raped and they're like, well, but it felt good. So then I must have wanted it on some level. And
yes.
Therefore, it wasn't really rape or whatever. And like, that's that whole conversation.
It's like, that's or it's like true. Your body responding is different. Your body responded, but that doesn't make it okay if it wasn't okay for you. Actually, there's another podcast that. Adam Young, who does the Place We Find Ourselves podcast. He has one about like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, you know, just like sort of the nervous system responses to trauma. And in one of the segments, he talks about that, where sometimes women who've experienced rape or sexual trauma will either have frozen and done nothing to fight back. And then they have a lot of shame about that. But that was literally their nervous system trying to keep them alive. That is an adaptive, helpful, just because you don't fight and you laid there or you just sort of like quote unquote took it. Don't like that story going along with that story that like you let it happen. There was some piece of you that wanted it to happen. You asked for it. You deserved it. Something, whatever the like story is around it that you're telling yourself is just not true because your nervous system was trying to keep you alive. And the choice that it made was to freeze and to just freeze, literally freeze. Yeah. Or also the idea that like, fawning into an experience like that. And also it could just be a body response because like, you know, clitoral stimulation, whatever is happening, it's different from like, it can be disconnected from our brain of what do we like and want in this conversation. I know this has gotten like a little dark and heavy, but at some point though, that can also come into play with the conversation. Again, not now because they don't need to know about that, but they will also, okay, wait, really quick. Last thing, because I kind of mentioned it about like the difference between boys' hands in their pants and girls' hands in their pants and like how to handle that situation is it's normal masturbation and self-exploration and all these different things. We need to allow it to happen, but it does have to have its boundaries around it. Right. And so I think an easy way in what I've heard and read to say and do and what I've also done in my house is to just be like, that's a private place. So it needs to, you can handle it in a private area. So you need to go into your room. We cannot just be like on the couch. You cannot be walking around in the grocery store with your hands in your pants. Like we need to have some privacy around this because it's still a private part. And so no shame to you. I understand what you're doing. I know why you're doing it. It feels good. And that's okay. And that's like an okay part, or it's like an okay experience against being super neutral and not putting any of our adult concepts onto like child exploration of their body, because it doesn't mean anything. It's normal and natural and developmental. And there are warning signs that are outside of the realm of normal and natural. And you can look into those too, that would maybe make us think like, okay, has something happened to my child? Have they actually been abused? There's way more behaviors that would be happening in those situations. But just general body exploration or being like, this feels good, or like when I touch this, I like it, and blah, 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 you know, and they're like little ways that they say those things or that you witness them doing it is totally perfectly natural and normal. Mm-hmm. And also for little girls. And so I just have to say it again, because again, I think like everybody just like smiles and laughs and nods when it happens with a boy, and with a girl, it feels different. And so we need to confront that and ask, well, why? Why would that feel different? It's because of the way that our culture has shamed women for their own sexual pleasure for all of time. So
yep.
Anyway, that's all I have for you now. So, perfect. Check out the show notes for a lot of different resources, and we can find somebody to be on the show too, because I think that there's so much more to be said about this, and it's so fascinating.
Yeah, I know, and it is such a complex topic, but I feel like you did a great job breaking it down, and it's super helpful for me having, you know, a toddler and going into this space. And just, I think the more knowledge that we have and the more ready we are, you know, the better equipped we'll be. And the last thing I was just going to say is, you know, even if something happens to your child, because you've had these conversations, then you can, they like, yes, hopefully they still come to you, and then you can get them help sooner. Because so much, like if you work with anyone who's worked with trauma, which, you know, that's just around my space a lot, and so many people who've been abused as kids, like they never went to therapy. They never got help. No one ever knew. It's this thing that they bury deep inside of themselves that affects them for the rest of their life versus, and it's like, no, you can't control everything. You can't have this anxiety that you like can't walk around the in your world because you're like, well, what if something happens to my child? If something does happen to your child, you've equipped them with the knowledge to come to you so that you can then give them other tools to process, and they're not going to live with this like thing for the rest of their life. You know, there are so many things that you can do to help them. And so even if something happens, which God forbid, hopefully it doesn't, you're still better off having your child know how to come to you, talk to you, get support so you can help them process and deal with that too. So I just want to say that.
Exactly. And like you believing what your child says to you and taking their words seriously is, you know, way more powerful than we think. And I know that it can be complicated because it's like, well, what if like a 2-year-old says something and it's like, whoa, you know, but the reality is, unfortunately, in the judicial system, it is just like he said against she said, and kids always lose. They almost always lose unless there's some sort of, you know, physical evidence of it. Even sometimes when there is, the perpetrators are not punished in the way that they should be, in my opinion. And it's not like we're going to get that justice. The justice that we can give to our child is believing them and hearing them and then getting them that help that you just mentioned. So thank you for that.
Cool. Thank you, Dr. Morgan. You're amazing.
Thanks. Bye. Kids get sick. It's natural and normal. And there are things we can do to support their immune systems naturally that help not only with symptoms, but the progression of the illness. I've made a course that highlights all of my top immune support remedies and home care methods to support your children, from newborns all the way through to big kids. I discuss herbs, homeopathics, nutraceutical supplements, targeted nutrients, using nature as medicine, hydrotherapy practices at home, and more. The Winter is Coming webinar is a natural cold and flu course for kiddos that you'll want to revisit again and again. Find the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.